Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron, special guest, Jeremy Freed. What's up, guys?
How you doing today, Nick?
Jeremy, welcome back on the pod. Nick, always a pleasure. Really excited to talk NBA basketball.
Yes, we're going to start off with a game. We got trades. We're going to talk the Grizzly situation. We're going to give our all-star picks. Before we get started, though, as always, check us out. iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But Corey, I'm going to pass it right over to you to start us off with some hot take shot fake.
Right, so we're doing a little bit of hot take shot fake. Basically, how this game works is I scroll through Twitter and I find some takes. I write them down, then we'll debate if they're a good take or a bad take. So first off, the Dallas Mavericks will regret holding on to Dennis Smith Jr. Hot take or shot fake?
Ooh, I think that's a hot take. I think they are going to regret holding on to him. I don't think he's shown himself to be tremendously conducive to this team. I think it's the team on the way up, and Dennis Smith Jr. doesn't seem like he wants to be a part of it. So I'm going to roll with that. I think that they should be looking to get him out of town, while he still has the most value that he possibly can.
Yeah. I'm almost going to be like in between here. I think it's a hot take that they're making it seem like they want to keep him, but a shot fake if they actually do keep him long term. I think bringing him back and making him kind of work his value up and not losing all leverage is a really good idea, and it'll help them kind of move him moving forward. But if they're keeping him long term, I don't know necessarily he's a great fit, but I would still move him. But I think the way they did it is helping build up value, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Obviously, I wouldn't be surprised, Nick, if what you said is true. If maybe they're just bringing him back to kind of up his value a little bit more because he hasn't played in a couple of weeks. But yeah, I could definitely see this being a hot take. Next up, our boy Carmelo Anthony will never play in the NBA again. Hot take or shot fake?
It's a little in between, but I tend towards a hot take. I think we may have seen the end of Carmelo. I think we may have seen the end of Dwight. I don't see the point kind of in putting Carmelo back on a basketball court at this point. I don't think that Houston got better once they got rid of him, but he certainly wasn't contributing to that team. And if, you can't contribute as a veteran to a veteran team that has, finals aspirations, like is a rebuilding team going to bring him? So, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him again, but I think we've seen the last of Carmelo.
I'm going to go shot fake here. I think we see Carmelo in one more stint. Obviously, we saw the Laker talk, and I wouldn't be surprised if a playoff team got really desperate going into the postseason, and they had a ton of injuries, and they just bring Carmelo in, at least somebody they could have off the bench or like a last option type piece. I think maybe next year he'll be even more humbled, and he might be able to find a role. But I think it's probably one more stint, and then we'll kind of base off what happens next after that.
Yeah, I'm going with shot fake too. I just think someone will take a flyer on him. Obviously, you can't. I mean, the Melo, what we know Melo to be, at least in his prime, was an all-time scorer. So I think, like you said, I think there's one more stint probably left in him. Next up, is Damian Lillard a top 3-point guard? Hot take or shot fake? Or actually, I should reword that to Damian Lillard is a top 3-point guard. Hot take or shot fake?
Oof. We haven't done our OTG rankings in a sec, so I have to see where I had them. I mean, I feel like the last time that we did them, I had him as a top 3-point guard. I kind of felt like, he was, in some ways the best point guard, outside of Steph Curry. I've soured on Portland since then, but, let's run with it. I struggled to think of, two other people I'd put with Steph Curry ahead of, Dame. So let's say he's top three. Sure, let's go with it. Hot take.
Yeah, I'm agree with it, Jeremy. I think I'm going to go hot take, at least for this season. Long as we're still considering James Harden a shooting guard, I think you probably have Steph, and then you maybe have Kyrie. And then after that, I think it's kind of a toss-up, and Dame's probably right there. You can make an argument for Kemba, but he's kind of cooled off a little bit. So I think so far this season, I would say Dame's top three.
I'm saying shot fake, but
you gotta give it your top three now.
It's for me. It's Curry, Kyrie, and Westbrook. But obviously, Westbrook's inefficient shooting numbers. You can obviously make a case that because he's been so inefficient, that Lillard probably ups him because Lillard obviously is sensational. But just watching them go head to head last night, I don't know. I give the slight edge to me, Westbrook, because Westbrook's playing probably the best all around basketball of his career, despite not shooting well. Next up, the Detroit Pistons should explore moving Andre Drummond. Hot take or shot fake?
We'll go hot take on that. I mean, you know, Detroit is not anything special right now. So I don't know why there's anybody on that roster that should be, you know, somehow untouchable. I think, you know, that they should explore all options for improving that team because it's just not a good team. So, you know, Andre Drummond shouldn't have this, you know, kind of favored person status where, you know, he's somehow, you know, the one person that, you know, Detroit's not going to move on from. I don't know really who wants him. It's kind of you know, he's a little bit of a vestige of a bygone era of basketball in terms of that, you know, big center, you know, rebounds, blocks some shots just by virtue of his size, but, you know, doesn't have, you know, spacing and movement in the way that we expect the modern NBA to. So, I mean, they should certainly listen, but I don't know what they'll get for him.
Yeah, I pretty much 100% agree with Jeremy. A hot take right here. I mean, why wouldn't they explore moving Andre Drummond? It's not like he's some dominant player that, and they're in the playoffs right now. I think they're sitting a couple games out. So, I mean, look to move Andre Drummond. I doubt anybody's really interested in him.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. Hot take as well. I just think, you know, you can't have Drummond and Griffin on the same team in today's NBA, especially without a point guard who can really facilitate, which Reggie Jackson has shown that he can't be. Next up, the Memphis Grizzlies will not find any trade suitors for Mike Conley or Marcus Gasol by this deadline. Hot take or shot fake?
I think that's a shot fake. I mean, certainly there are people who are going to be interested in them. It remains to be seen if Memphis was actually going to, you know, have it, you know, in them to pull the trigger and move these, you know, franchise, you know, centerpieces. You know, I don't know if they'll get an offer that, you know, is really suitable to them. I mean, I'm certainly of the mind that they should move on. That team is not going anywhere. I mean, they had a stated goal of playoffs this year, and you have, you know, Para, you know, coming out before the season saying this is a team that can win 50 games. And after a hot start, they've been absolutely putrid. So, you know, they just don't have many pieces beyond that in order to improve the team. You know, they got Triple J, and then that's kind of it as far as the future piece. So they need to do what they can to reboot the situation because, you know, the Grizzlies are going nowhere as currently constituted. I don't know if that means they'll move one or both, you know, they should certainly, you know, get close to taking a deal on them.
Yeah, based off the reports yesterday being open that they'd be willing to trade both those guys, I think they're going to get more open to the idea as they get closer to deadline, fall farther out of the playoff race. So I think it's a shot fake. I think they at least move Conley. You know, it's going to be harder to probably move Gasol because I don't think the value is quite as high where they can kind of probably convince a team to give them some type of asset for Conley and that would put them in a good position moving forward. So I think it's a shot fake.
Yeah, I leave with shot fake too. I think Mike Conley probably, which – we'll talk about later on the show, I'm sure. But he's got, I think, a lot more value than Gasol and likely could be moved. Next up, Nick, you'll like this one. The Brooklyn Nets have solidified themselves as a playoff team in the East for years to come.
Let's call that a hot take. I mean, part of that is due, in fact, to the reality of the East being so terrible. You know, Brooklyn has a great core. You know, I was looking at something on Twitter, you know, where somebody felt very strongly about the Nets and, you know, and it's like, I don't want to hear about, you know, the Celtics anymore. And they were talking about, you know, would you take, you know, Jaylen Brown over Caris LeVert, you know? And I was like, I wonder if I would take Jaylen Brown over Caris LeVert. I mean, last year, no, but last year, yes, but this year, you know, no, like Caris LeVert looked much better than Jaylen Brown. They were kind of, you know, going through all the people involved in, you know, the Nets absolutely kneecapped themselves with the Celtics trade. And they've still come out of it in pretty good shape and much better shape than a number of teams that had all their assets to work with in rebuilding. So if this is what they've, you know, the lemonade they've been able to make with lemons, this is a team that's just going to continue on its way up. I really like the young core. Nick, you know, can say far more about the Nets than any of, you know, the rest of us. But I think that this is a team that's going to be, you know, making dates in May and June for years to come.
Yeah, definitely going with a hot take here. Obviously, you knew that going in, Corey. like Jeremy said, though, not only the young core, they've done a great job drafting. All Sean Marks draft picks have really started to work out. You know, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Jana Moose has been banged up. But Rodion Skurucz, who's been the 40th pick in the second round, you know, he ended up working out too. And then one thing, you know, obviously the Boston trade put them in such bad position asset-wise. but allow them to really build a good front office and coaching staff, which I think will be another main reason why they maintain, you know, a playoff stature for the next couple years. And obviously going to this offseason, a lot of cap space. Sean Marks has been pretty good moving the cap space and moving things around to try to get the most possible available. So I expect them to be in the playoffs at least for the next couple years and moving forward. I think Sean Marks did a great job and Kenny Atkinson of building a foundation and a culture in Brooklyn.
I would go with hot take as well. Obviously, the Brooklyn Nets have been probably one of the greatest storylines to come out of this NBA season. You know, the really bad stretch of losses they had, all close games, and now this recent stretch where D'Lo's playing out of his mind. Dinwiddie's had some clutch moments. Their best player, well, question, arguably their best player, LeVert, isn't even out there still. Jared Allen's blocking any big-time star they see. Obviously, yeah, this Nets team has come a long way, and they're looking really good for the future. Last up. Paul George is better than Jimmy Butler. Hot take or shot fake?
Hot take.
Hot take. Yeah, jump in there on it, Nick. I mean, he's clearly better. He's clearly better.
And he's not an asshole, which I think is really important when you're talking about, you know, building a team. Obviously, the whole thing with Jimmy Butler, maybe the thing in Philly's not as bad, but Paul George seems willing to work in any role and do what's best for the team. And right now, he just looks like a more dominant player. I mean, the performance last night against the Blazers, he was having big plays on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, Paul George, you know, I can't think of an aspect of Jimmy Butler's game that I, you know, prefer to Paul George's. I don't think that there's been any point in time, I mean, outside of, you know, Paul George, you know, injury and recovery, you know, that I would have taken, you know, Jimmy Butler over Paul George. I don't even know if I think it's a particularly hot take. I think, you know, Paul George is just better than Jimmy Butler. And the fact, as you said, he's not a dick is, you know, just like icing on the cake.
Yeah, I go to hot take as well. The only reason I brought this up is because I'm pretty sure I ran a poll on Twitter either last year or the year before, and it was like really in favor of Jimmy Butler being better than Paul George. So I thought we should revisit that. But that's it for hot take or shot fake.
And I think some of that poll, honestly, was the fact that Paul George wasn't 100%. Like right now, he's starting to look back to like peak athleticism. Last year, he was dealing with some type of injury. I think his last year with the Pacers, he wasn't amazing. And now, obviously, he's doing well. Jimmy Butler's had all the off-the-court drama. So it just kind of makes it an easier conversation.
Definitely.
All right, well, that wraps it up for Hot Take Shot Fake. We are going to do our all-star starters, then we'll get into the trade deadline marathon stuff. So you guys want to start with the East or the West?
Well, let's go with the East. We've just been chatting about Brooklyn and the playoff picture there. So let's start with the least.
All right, let's go with the first guard spot in the East.
I think that's got to be ticketed for Kyrie. I mean, not just because he leads in the voting for the guards, but I think he is the best guard in the Eastern Conference right now. He's got his own drama kind of going on right now, but at a lower level than Jimmy Butler. I think for Kyrie, it's just a question of shutting his mouth. Kyrie, when he wants to be, is one of the top. Probably maybe five offensive talents, I think, in the league overall. And he's sorting out what it means to be a leader on a team. He's been, really great for Boston as always. He should be holding down the first guard spot.
Yeah, the first spot for me is Irving. I kind of wanted to give it to Lowry or Walker, but Walker's cooled down and Kyle Lowry's missed all those games. And Kyrie, this last stretch, has been another level. And obviously, it kind of looks like he's becoming a true leader. For the Celtics in a time in which they really needed it. So for me, it's got to be Irving.
Yeah, it's an easy one for me. Lock in Kyrie for that number one guard spot. Now the number two guard spot in the East for the starters is a difficult one, in my opinion.
That I will agree with you on. From like a talent standpoint, as far as like who do I think is like the best shooting guard kind of in the East right now, I tend towards Oladipo, but he's missed too many games. So I guess maybe I'll go with Ben Simmons. I don't know that they're necessarily like tremendously conducive, but also when I'm thinking about, the All-Star game and when it's most interesting and exciting is when, the ball's moving. And I think, Ben Simmons, the facilitator, get out there fast and transition, looking for people. I'd like to see Ben Simmons out there because also I think he hasn't quite taken, the leap that some people expected that he would. And I think that when, he's in that environment with, the absolute like alphas of the league, he really elevates his game. So I'll go for Ben Simmons in the two spot.
Yeah, I wanted to give it to Oladipo because Oladipo is my guy. But obviously him missing time didn't really work out. I also, a part of me really wanted to give it to Bradley Beal. But I just, because of the team's record, I just couldn't. So I also went with Ben Simmons, who's obviously played, I think, almost every game this season, I think. And as of late, he's getting more aggressive offensively. He seems to be kind of finding his role with Jimmy Butler there. So I guess I would give it to Ben Simmons, but I really wanted to give it to Bradley Beal.
Yeah, Beal is absolutely very tempting. But as you said, I mean, and, you know, Bradley Beal has fantastic PR. Because, you know, everybody's just like, oh, well, the Wizards are terrible, but none of that is Bradley Beal's fault. You know, and I don't know that that is exactly true. But at the same time, you know, he has been fantastic. I mean, he may be having, I think he is having his best season ever.
He is.
He's basically like a 25-5-5 this year. He's been really terrific. But the Wizards are awful. So it is tough to look at that situation and say, you know, well, the best player on this team is, you know, the second best guard in the East. It's like, if you're really that good, your team should be a little bit better than they have been.
Yeah, that's pretty much the same argument over here. I have both names written down. I think Ben Simmons gets a nod because Philly's winning, and Washington obviously has been a bad team. They're starting to get back in the playoff race, but there's still a lot of question there. I mean, I'm sure some people would make the argument for Kemba Walker, but I think Ben Simmons is kind of the easy pick because obviously he brings it offensively, provides that defensive versatility. Now, for the next three spots, I'm going to guess that we all have the same Antetokounmpo, Kawhi, and Joel Embiid.
I mean, that's an easy 1-2-3 for the East front court.
Yeah, same. I have the only other name I have penciled in is Blake Griffin as like a honorable mention because he has been tremendous, but it comes to the same thing where his team isn't having enough success compared to these other three guys.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, earlier in the season, when you know, Detroit was looking really good, they came out really strong. They were, you know, I think for a while, you know, kind of holding down the four spot in the East. And, you know, Blake, I mean, I think Blake as well is really having, if not, you know, if not the absolute best season of his career, one of the best. I'd call it probably his best season. He's been terrific this year, but as Detroit, you know, plummets down the standings, I mean, Blake's still deserving of an all-star spot, but not a starting spot.
Yeah, 100%. I think if, you know, they were back in the top of the East, there'd be some, you know, an argument maybe to get him in there, but I think obviously Antetokounmpo, Kawhi, Joel have all been great. Now, moving on to the West starters, I think the guards we can both lock in, Steph Curry, James Harden.
I mean, I'd lock in James Harden if the Rockets were any good. no, I mean, it's Curry and Harden, like, for sure. For sure it's Curry and Harden. You know, it's I don't think anybody else really has an argument.
I kind of didn't want to give it to Curry because he's missed so much time. But again, there's no other guard. I mean, I guess you can make a case for Lillard, maybe being that second guard, but I think you have to give it to Curry because the shooting splits when he's on the floor this year are arguably the best of his career. So I think, yeah, it's Curry and Harden easily in the West.
Curry's just been on another level too. Like Harden's been amazing and Curry hasn't really had to do it quite as much because obviously his team's super stacked. So that's a lock for me for the West. Now the forward / center spots get really interesting. We could go by give our three. So you just give your three picks and then we'll just kind of go through there.
My three picks for the starting spots are Kevin Durant, Paul George, and Nikola Jokic. Kevin Durant somehow is having a totally invisible, underrated, like, you know, 29-8-7 season or whatever the heck he's doing right now. You know, at a certain point, you kind of feel bad for him almost somehow, just in how he is so invisible. I mean, he certainly has a little bit of a martyr complex with all of this stuff, but, he certainly, you know, was carrying the team when Steph was out. He's been fantastic. He's having one of his best years. I wouldn't say his absolute best, like we've said for a few other people. He's been an Iron Man. He's been terrific. Definitely, you know, Durant there. Paul George, obviously, we were talking about before. He's having his best year. You know, if it wasn't for a number of people who, you know, like you know, James Harden, amongst other people, you know, just having crazy supernova years, he'd be a legitimate MVP candidate, and he might still be, 27-8-4 for Paul George. He's been terrific. And then, you know, I'll take Jokic over Anthony Davis. I might have taken, you know, Davis, all things being equal, but Anthony Davis injured. And so, is he even going to be healthy in time to play in the All-Star game? I may be mixing injuries in my mind, but
no, he's 2 to 4 weeks, so it'll be right on the cusp. Actually, right. Matt Nugent just wrote a great article about him and how the medical side of the injury and how that's going to impact AD. Just quick shout out.
Exactly. So, so Jokic for sure. I mean, he might be the best passing big man ever already at this point. And this is, if he scores a few extra points a game, between now and the All-Star game, he might go into there with a 20-10-7, as a center. I mean, he's averaging more assists than LeBron James. So, what he's done for a Nuggets team that has been decimated by injuries throughout the season to lead them to the two spot right behind Golden State, Jokic, Durant, and Paul George for me.
Man, so easily for me, Kevin Durant and Paul George both have a spot easily. The last spot for me is a toss-up between Davis, LeBron, and Jokic. Jokic?
Jokic.
Man, that's going to be a bitch.
Get used to it.
Yeah, So Denver being 31-14 and second in the West, I think that pushes the Joker into the All-Star starting lineup. LeBron has missed obviously a ton of time, but even though LeBron has missed enough time, I just don't see how you don't make him a starter. I'm not saying he should be a starter, but I just don't think the NBA mass is going to allow him not to be a starter in the All-Star game. I think you make a great point about Davis, Jeremy, with the injury and everything else. I think he's probably on the outside. I probably would have to give it to Jokic, but I think LeBron's a close second for me.
Yeah, I think KD's a lock for all of us. Now I'm going to give picks would be, and then I'll give what I think they'll actually be. I think Jokic deserves to be in it, and I think Paul George deserves to be in it. But like Corey said, I think LeBron is probably going to get the nod over Paul George most likely just because he's LeBron. And then I wouldn't be surprised if AD got the nod, even though he might not even be able to play just because of the star talent. But I think Jokic and Paul George are probably more deserving than both those guys.
I mean, what I guess remains to be seen, maybe you guys have the answers to this. I don't know for certain, but I mean, of course, LeBron's leading vote getter in the West. So I guess he'll be the West captain. Does that mean that he's fundamentally a starter if he's healthy or not? That's kind of, what it might come down to. Like, if it's just like he is a starter because of the nature of how we've set up, the voting process. Or maybe that just means that he's the captain. I can't imagine that he's healthy enough to play in the All-Star game and he doesn't start the All-Star game as the leading vote getter, in the entire league, I think, at this point. Is he ahead of Giannis? Yeah, just a little bit.
And then, you look at it, the media and the players obviously have their input as well. And I'm sure LeBron's well-respected and people are just going to vote for him even though he's been banged up. So I'd be super surprised if LeBron wasn't starting.
Yeah, same. But I would say this. You make a good point, Jeremy. If LeBron, if he's not 100% and he wants to take it easy, maybe he names himself – obviously he'll be named captain if he continues to lead the votes. Maybe he makes a starting five that doesn't include himself. I don't know. I don't know.
Or he just sits out. I could see him being the captain and then just sitting out.
Yeah. I think that's a good that's a good thing to bring up, a good point. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that because obviously the groin injury and LeBron at his age, you can't play around with your body.
Exactly, and that's obviously been an injury that's lingered for him. But moving on from the All-Star starters, we'll do our All-Star reserves, maybe over the next week or so. We're going to start the trade deadline. First up, actually, Jeremy's trade. Day 13.1, the Wizards received Gary Harris, Paul Millsap in a second-round pick, 2019 second-round pick. Denver receives Bradley Beal and Jan Mahimny. Let you go first on this one.
Yeah, it's mine, so let's hear what everybody else has to say.
So Gary Harris is being moved. That's the big piece in this, right? Well,
Bradley Beal is going to Denver.
Right, Bradley Beal.
But yeah, I mean, the big piece, I think it's two fairly big pieces, but Gary Harris is the prime.
Obviously the Wizards get the nice fact that Gary Harris is under contract for the next 3 years, I believe, right? 3-4 years. So they get a nice young piece, plays both sides of the ball, probably isn't an ego that clashes with John Wall. The Nuggets get a knockdown perimeter scorer and Bradley Beal. The Ian Mahimy contract is whatever. But I don't necessarily like this for Denver. I just wouldn't want to shake up the roster. Obviously, Paul Millsap's a good vet for them, even though he's been banged up last year and a little bit this year. I wouldn't want to shake what Denver has. But if you're trying to upgrade talent and you're trying to win more now, I think Bradley Beal is the type of player which could push them farther.
Yeah, I don't hate the trade. I think, you know, obviously there's a chemistry concern, but bringing Bradley Beal is definitely an upgrade. Maybe you could find a way to get Denver to also get Markieff Morris just to give them a little bit more forward depth because they are losing Millsap. And I think Washington maybe wants a first-round pick. You know, they get rid of the Mahimney contract, but Bradley Beal's a really good player. Gary Harris isn't quite there. Paul Millsap's probably a free agent at the end of the year, so you're not necessarily getting the long-term asset. So I think if maybe the Wizards were to get a first-round pick in this trade, I think it's pretty much a good for both sides, and maybe Denver could get a possible forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously I put it together there, and you know, on, you know, whether or not, you know, a first rounder went in there, you know, with the deal. You know, I think that, you know, as far as, you know, the different trades, you know, kind of go, you know, you have like the lots of youth, you know, trades that, you know, Washington could potentially get there. But I don't know if, you know, that's something that's tremendously appealing to them because of where they are with some of their other pieces, most notably John Wall, who is, you know, on that, of course, you know, humongous long-term deal. I mean, this is not a team they're going to be able to tear down to the studs. And I think, you know, ownership has come out and say, you know, we don't tank, we don't, you know, do that. So I think, you know, as far as options that they're going to have where, you know, as you said, Harris, good young piece, locked up for a while, reasonable contract. And especially someone who's, you know, part of a, you know, an ensemble cast a little bit right now. You know, you have, you know, a lot of good pieces in Denver, but, you know, outside of Jokic, maybe like no, like superstars that if he was a bigger focal piece, you know, focal point of what Washington was doing in offense, then, you know, he'd take his game to even, you know, another level and they'd find themselves, you know, first off, you know, out from, you know, Mahinmi and, you know, clearing out some space to be able to have more flexibility to work there. And, you know, with somebody who's, you know, approximating a lot of what Bradley Beal does for them. And of course, you know, Denver, you know, I'm not as concerned about the kind of chemistry elements because of how many injuries they've dealt with this year. I mean, they've really, really, you know, gone through a lot of pieces and players. And so, you know, whether it's like somebody who's coming back from an injury or somebody who's, you know, kind of new to the squad, I mean, I think they've had so many moving pieces and roll with the punches so well that a player of Beal's caliber and character, they'd be able to integrate no problem.
Yeah, it definitely would be the talent upgrade. It just seemed like the long-term picture. And then also taking on Mahimi's contract, it's like, do they also, are they concerned about having to pay some other guys in that team? You know, it's all different elements to look at. But overall, I think the structure of the trade, you know, move a few things around, I think it could definitely happen. Now, moving on to day 14, Dalton Pence, who's been pretty much one of the most popular names on here. Sacramento Kings received Jeremy Lin. Atlanta Hawks received Zach Randolph, Ben McLemore, and a 2020 second-round pick.
I mean, I think I'd like to see maybe Atlanta get a little more, you know, for Lin than that. You know, Randolph is, I mean, just I mean, he's not contributing on the court. I mean, I think he's more salary cap filler. Obviously, he's, you know, resuscitated his image as far as, you know, character is concerned. And now he's a, you know, a legitimate, you know, kind of veteran presence there. You know, Ben McLemore has always been a disappointment in the league, you know, to my chagrin. We're Kansas fans in my household. And, you know, Ben McLemore was a great Jayhawk. And, you know, he had high hopes for him going to the league. And he has not paid off on those anywhere he's been. I don't think he's bringing anything to him. So if all they're getting for that is a, you know, is a second rounder, you know, they might be able to get more elsewhere. You know, if they can't, then, you know, Lin's not really, you know, doing anything for them, you know, in the, you know, shorter or long term. So, you know, I guess like, great, you got a second rounder for him. You know, I'd hope that they'd maybe be able to, you know, get something more of interest than really that being the one longer term asset.
Yeah, I'm pretty much spot on with you. I think for the Kings' perspective, getting a backup point guard in Jeremy Lin would probably help De'Aaron Fox and company. But for the Atlanta Hawks, obviously you're getting worse because you're not getting a lot of talent that can play valuable minutes over top of Jeremy Lin's minutes. Like Ben McLemore, as you just mentioned, disappointment. What sticks out to me whenever I think about his last year, Kawhi Leonard stole the ball from him like two possessions in a row, and he like just got on the floor and he got pulled out like immediately after. So that's my Ben McLemore memory.
My memory for him is when he asked for the Kobe challenge and he never gave him one.
Yeah, that's a good one too. And obviously, you know, Zach Randolph hasn't played this year. He probably isn't going to play this year. Maybe he'll play in Atlanta if he was to be dealt over there. I would agree with you, Jeremy. I think they could definitely get more for Jeremy Lin than, you know, two guys expiring who don't have much court value and a 2020 second round pick. But if this is the best they can do, then I guess you make the move because it does give the Hawks a better chance of losing.
Yeah, I mean, they at least get a second-round pick. I think in a best-case scenario, they're at least getting 2 second-round picks for Lynn or maybe a late first-round pick from, like, a real contending-type team. So I agree. I think they might be able to get more. Worst-case scenario, they take this trade just to get the asset and don't lose Lynn for nothing or end up buying him out.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, you don't want to be where Memphis was last year where you have, you know, Tyreke Evans and you hold on to him and hold on to him and hold on to him and everybody thinks he's going to go and then they don't do anything and then he just leaves and you have nothing to show for him. It's like, turn him into something because, you know, Jeremy Lin is not long for the Atlanta Hawks.
Exactly. And a second round pick is kind of like a lottery almost where you get you put a pick in, you pick a player, he might turn into a good player, he might turn into nothing, but at least you have that shot.
It might now, be Rodion Kurix.
Exactly. If everybody had a Sean Marks. But day 14.1, Jorge Cantu. So this is just bad contracts galore. The Grizzlies received James Johnson, Deion Waiters, a 2022 first-round pick, the better of the two picks, so it's a pick swap. And the Heat received Chandler Parsons in a 2022, the worst of the two picks.
There's a lot to unpack here and not that, you know, complicated of a trade. You know, I was trying to think, you know, obviously Memphis gets like the better of the two picks and Miami gets like the worst of the two. So I'm wondering, it's like, is that the way that I think that that would go? Do I think that like Memphis is getting the worst end of the deal, so they need the better part of the pick swap? You know, I'm just not sure. You know, I think it's just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I don't know. Maybe why either of the teams would do it. I mean, obviously Jorge's a Miami fan, so maybe he's, you know, probably motivated just to get Waiters and Johnson out of town. And, you know, he's happy to see if, you know, Chandler Parsons, who claims to be healthy and is just dying to get back on a basketball court, maybe he can, you know, contribute to something in South Beach. I mean, he'd certainly contribute to the club scene, but, you know, I don't know. Honestly, like if either of the teams would be properly motivated to actually pull the trigger on this.
I really wish I could hear Jorge break this down for me. Just why he would be okay. I mean, I understand that you are saving some money long term because obviously Parsons is just 2 years. Both these guys are 3 years. James Johnson is kind of a shell of himself. Deion Waiters is a little bit overweight, kind of a crybaby. I don't think it makes sense for Memphis now that they're trying to unload Gasol and Conley. If they were trying to win now still, then I think this is actually a really good move for them. You know, if you're trying to compete for a playoff spot, you're trying to get back up in the West, even though I think they're too far gone at this point. Having a player like Deion Waiters who can give you some more offensive pop and having just the all-around tough guy in James Johnson probably would really fit in with the grit and grind culture. I think that would work if they were trying to win, but, you know, they're not trying to win now, apparently.
Yeah, I like Jeremy said, I don't think either team is really motivated. Miami probably more so because they're getting off an extra year of contracts, and Parsons, maybe they can kind of turn them into something and whatnot, but they're going to be stuck with the money for another year if they didn't make this trade. The pick swap situation honestly doesn't really make sense because Grizzlies are probably going to be worse than the Heat at that point, or they'll be right around the same level, so you're pick swapping just a couple picks. Like if I'm Memphis and I'm taking on the extra year of these contracts, I want an actual asset. So I want, you know, a separated pick or a second round pick or a young player or something. It just doesn't really make a ton for Memphis. Even if they were trying to compete now, they're locked into these guys who are not getting better.
Wait, guys, I have to interrupt. So this morning I tweeted Jamal Crawford was kind of washed and he just followed me on Twitter.
if we don't hear from Corey, we know what happens. But, Lord. On to day 14.2. No Jamal Crawford trades over here, though. This is another trade from Dalton. Miami would receive Jason Smith, a 2019 second-round pick, a future second-round pick, and Milwaukee would receive Wayne Ellington.
You know, I could see it going down. You know, of course, the current Milwaukee model is predicated on, you know, the kind of traditional LeBron model, which is, you know, your centerpiece and shooters to space the floor so that your, you know, big, dominant, athletic guy can, you know, go, you know, kind of unmolested to the hoop. So I think Wayne Ellington, you know, contributes to that happening. I mean, he's not really, you know, in the Miami rotation right now, despite his marksmanship. So if they want to get a couple of second rounders in order to, you know, give Milwaukee a better shot at keeping the floor open for, you know, Giannis rampaging towards the hoop, then that sounds good for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I like this from the Bucks perspective because I think the Bucks are just in the ultimate, let's just space the floor for Antetokounmpo. And Wayne Ellington, obviously, he's known for hitting some tough off-balance shots constantly. I would really like this move for the Bucks. For Miami, you know, it's these are all type of moves that push them towards a further rebuild or trying to actually rebuild. So I like this move.
Yeah, and Miami hasn't really played Ellington a ton. Like, they haven't used him at half as much as last season, and I think they're trying to open up space. Also, someone brought up a great point. You know, it's $1 million difference in the contract, so it would help Miami with their luxury tax payment. And they do get 2 second-round picks, so I think it's a good trade for both sides. This is one of the more realistic trades I think we've seen through the deadline. Now, on to day 14.3, to Charlotte, Mike Muscala and Korkmaz, and to Philly, Frank Kaminsky and Dwayne Bacon.
Yeah, I saw this when it came through, and it's interesting. I mean, Frank Kaminsky, it does look like, has, you know, kind of fallen out of favor there in Charlotte.
He's bad.
I think that, Charlotte must rue literally every day that they didn't go and trade that pick for the 4 first-rounders being offered to them by Boston so that Boston could take Justice Winslow, because Charlotte just had to have Frank the Tank. I mean, I guess getting something for him at this point is of some interest, but Muscala and Kaminsky to me seem like very similar players. I don't know that it does anything for either team to swap between the two of them. You know, Korkmaz has kind of come on a little bit since, he didn't get his, option picked up for next year. That's not quite phrased correctly. He didn't get the qualifying offer right. So Korkmaz has, been better in Philly, since Philly decided that they didn't want him anymore. I don't know if Dwayne Bacon is, a better, situation for them. I mean, maybe, Philly thinks that they can resuscitate Kaminsky. And certainly I'm very much on record as saying that the best sort of asset is the lottery pick, that didn't work out with this first team. There was a reason why he got pick time. Maybe he just needs a new set of scenery. Philly does is trying to fill in the gaps in the rotation around the big three.
Honestly, every single Charlotte fan I know is ecstatic that Frank the Tank is leaving Charlotte in this deal. Shout out to Evan Dial and Dylan Jackson. I can kind of see Mark's point in this. I think Dwayne Bacon actually does have some upside. I'm actually a decent fan of his athletic ability. I wouldn't really want to get rid of Korkmaz. I just think he needs some more time in the NBA. I feel like he's just a really raw prospect. We saw some of his big scoring outputs in Summer League. I get it. It's Summer League. Mike Muscala, solid. I think if you can get Frank the Tank, the best version of Frank the Tank, him spacing the floor from three could help Philly a little bit. I think this trade more so benefits the Hornets than I think it benefits the Sixers, though.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Hornets, like Korkmaz, is at least they're getting a flyer on him. I mean, Dwayne Bacon has some potential, too. I think Mike Muscala and Frank, not really super high on either of those guys. Best case, backup bigs for both of them. So I think it's an okay trade. I'm not in love with it in any way. But moving on to our next one, day 15.1, Nick C., has Phoenix receiving Wesley Matthews, Dennis Smith Jr., a 2023 Miami second-round pick, and Dallas receives TJ Warren, Josh Jackson, and Troy Daniels.
Well, that one's got, some merit to it. I think, obviously, Dennis Smith Jr., there's been, plenty of discussion on, him making his way out of Dallas. I think Wesley Matthews, poor Wesley Matthews, who, had a promising kind of NBA future, cut short by, that devastating Achilles injury. And he's made his way back, but he's not who he used to be. If they could go and turn, Dennis Smith Jr. and Wesley Matthews and, some picks into, TJ Warren, who is tremendously underrated. I think TJ Warren would be a great player alongside, Luka Doncic. He would be a great addition to that team. Josh Jackson, again, a high lottery pick in need of, some new surroundings. He may certainly find them in Dallas. I mean, maybe not, but certainly worth, taking a flyer on. I think that, that this is a very interesting trade, and I think it's the sort of trade that Dallas should absolutely be doing to get a player of TJ Warren's caliber, because, they don't have their first next year. Right now, I mean, they are, you know, stumbling towards the bottom of the West. And I, you know, just the East is too bad for them to like make it into the, I think it's a top five protected first. I don't think that they'll get there even if they tried to bottom out. You know, they should be trying to get into the playoffs. And I think this is a trade that could help them do that.
I like this trade. This is a really good trade. Obviously, Phoenix needs a point guard. Dennis Smith Jr. could be that answer. He can move the tempo. He helps with their pace. Wesley Matthews, you know, that is what it is. An okay 3-and-D player at this point of his career. Obviously, the ruptured Achilles he suffered a couple of years ago has really kind of stunted what he may have been in this second half of his career. But for Dallas, I've been really high on T.J. Warren having his best career. He's locked up long-term, gives them a decent, you know, in-between wing. Josh Jackson probably had one of his best games of the season last night in a losing effort. I think he had 20 and 10 or 20 and 7 off the bench at 31 minutes for the Suns. So obviously there's still a lot of potential there. And then Troy Daniels, three-point shooter. I like this move for Dallas because obviously your point guard is Luka Doncic. And if you can surround him with some young guys, a couple shooters, then I think that's what you should do. And then, you know, the pick being protected, I'm not really too worried about that. But the players involved, I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, I'm going to not like the trade a ton from Dallas's perspective because I think that they're really interested in having cap space for this offseason. So now they're bringing on Josh Jackson and TJ Warren, which is pretty much 17 or 18 mil, which they were getting in the expiring deal with Wesley Matthews. And I'm not sure if they're in love with Josh Jackson. Like Corey said, he had a really good game last night, but he struggled in the past. TJ Warren, like, he's a good player, but I'm not sure if he's a guy that just, like, really moves the needle for you. If I was them, I'd probably rather keep the cap space. And if I'm taking on a deal for Dennis Smith Jr., I'm hoping to probably get maybe a draft pick and then some type of expiring contract. But I'm obviously being picky.
I can say in this move, if I'm Dallas and I get these two guys, I'm looking to move Harrison Barnes probably ASAP.
Yeah, and that's going to be a task.
Right.
So it's like you have all these guys locked up and Harrison Barnes. I think from the money perspective, like the overall talent swap, I don't think it's bad. But I think just based off of what we've read about Dallas over the last year, I think especially with the way that Luka's played, they're going to be looking to swing for some big fishes in free agency like Mark Cuban always does.
Well, he always does, but he's yet to land anything really. So, you know, it's a question of, you know, does he want to, you know, go back to that well that, you know, has been so dry for him in years past? Or, you know, does he make the decision where, you know, would I prefer to, you know, make a move, you know, preemptively where, you know, I voluntarily give up that cap space in order to, you know, lock in a little, you know, bit more certainty. I mean, certainly I'd say from the level of success Dallas has had, you know, as a franchise, you know, the past few years where, you know, every year they kind of managed to be veteran E and then try for free agency and strike out and, you know, take on a few people in some kind of shorter term deals and things like that. And then try again next year. You know, at some point either, you know, they'll have to hit on something or decide that that's not going to work and try something new. So, you know, is this year that happens, or, you know, do they think that, you know, finally in Luka, they have a player that's really going to be a draw, and, you know, they'll actually land somebody. I think, you know, they probably conserve the cap space for this year in order to see if he is, you know, a lure. But if he's not, then, you know, they might pursue a different course of action next year.
And they might be able to still have a lot of cap space, even with the trade that they did make it. So that is an option too. Like Corey mentioned, maybe moving Harrison Barnes. I think that's the major sell of Dallas is you have Luka this year and maybe this is your time where you can kind of bring somebody in. We did skip day 15. That's my bad. Moving back there, Dalton Pence again. Houston Rockets receive Kent Bazemore, Dwayne Dedmon. Atlanta receives Brandon Knight, Nene, Marquise Chris, Carmelo Anthony, which is already traded. So this is kind of a wash, but he was just in there for salary reasons. 2019 and 2021 lottery protected first round pick.
That is a lot coming back to Atlanta when you're, you know, talking about those two picks and depending on, you know, how ultimately, like, you know, they would convey. I don't know if you're going to get better than, you know, two first round picks when you're looking at, you know, that, you know, combination of players, Bazemore and Dedmon. I mean, those are obviously, I think, well, I mean, they have Jeremy Lin also, but I think probably Bazemore and Dedmon, you know, represent, you know, their best assets, you know, that they could potentially move. And I think if they move them independently in deals that each brought back first round pick, you know, might as well move them jointly in a move that brings back two first round picks. But, you know, it may be, I mean, it's not a ton, I think, necessarily for Houston to give up. I mean, obviously, Nene gets replaced by Deadman, you know, which is important concerning, you know, considering that Capella's out. You know, Bazemore, you know, gets into, you know, the wing rotation there. I mean, Chris is, you know, a non-factor for Houston. Obviously, you know, Knight is as well. So, you know, it's a tangible upgrade on the court. You know, whether or not it's worth all that outlay of, you know, future assets is a question. But I think probably Atlanta is happier about that than Houston is, if I thought about it.
I mean, I like this move for Houston. Obviously, Houston's kind of in that stage. They're back in the middle of the hunt in the West. James Harden's playing out of his mind, but he continued to lose everybody who helps him. So I think adding a guy like Kent Bazemore, he can pretty much guard 1 through 3, give you a little bit of an all-around despite his three-point numbers being down this year. Dwayne Dedmon can also space the floor now, a decent three-point shooter, which was made aware to me by Nick, so thank you, Nick. So I think Houston definitely gets better with this. I mean, you're losing Brandon Knight. They're not going to miss Brandon Knight. Obviously, Melo would be a salary cap filler. He's obviously gone, but they could find a different filler on that roster, I'm sure. Nene, a little bit older. I think you get better if you have a younger Dedmon who can space the floor. Marquise Chris. You just got Ken Fareed, who pretty much does what Marquise Chris does. So I think this move for Houston makes sense. And obviously with Atlanta, you're getting first round draft picks. You're getting a couple guys in Brandon Knight who can stay through a rebuild, maybe even flip them in the future, like next year, depending on how well he plays the second half of this year. And then the other guys, you know, they're not going to be there long term either. So I think this is a decent move, especially with the draft picks Atlanta gets.
Yeah, I think the one reason Houston be okay giving up 2 first-round picks is they're getting off Brandon Knight's contract, which is an error on the trade machine. He actually has another year as well. They're also getting a couple million off with Nene's contract as well. So I think for both sides, it really works out, getting 2 first-round picks for Atlanta and then Houston getting some players that can help them win now and potentially move forward. And Bazemore, they have locked up for next year too, so at least they're getting someone for more than one season. On to day 16, Jeremy back at it again. Houston receives Rodney Hood. Cleveland receives Marquise Chris in a 2021 second-round pick via Houston.
I mean, you guys weigh in because obviously it's mine. I'll wrap it up.
I like the trade. I think this is another very realistic trade. I was kind of talking to Dalton about it yesterday. I think Cleveland doesn't really have much leverage. You know, Hood's an expiring contract. He's not an amazing player. He had those issues not wanting to play last year in the playoffs. They take a flyer on Chris for the Cavs. So I'm all good with this trade. It seems like a realistic one we could see.
Rodney Hood, to me, is one of the most interesting guys coming into the deadline. I've been looking at him a lot. I do like this trade for Houston. They get a decent defender in Rodney Hood, a decent scorer. Obviously, he's been a little bit inconsistent since he got traded from Utah last year. Even in Utah, he was a very inconsistent offensive scorer. But I like it for Houston. You're not giving up much. Why does Cleveland want to hold on to Rodney Hood? And I love the fact that because of like the trade, you know, the analysis, the Cleveland Cavaliers get minus 20 wins by moving Rodney Hood. Clearly, he's crucial. But I like this deal, Jeremy. This was a really good move, I think.
Well, thanks, guys. I mean, the trade machine is hilarious when you do these, you know, kind of trades around the edges with the Cavs, and it's like Cavs lose 18 wins. I'm like, the Cavs aren't going to win 18 games the whole season. It's like, so I don't know if they've lost 18 wins here. But yeah, you know, I mean, Rodney Hood. I think when, you know, they made the move for him last year, there was a lot of, you know, excitement about him. I mean, at the time, he was averaging almost 17 points a game for Utah, you know, and was still a young guy. And, you know, it was that sort of thing where it's, you know, a little youth and athleticism around LeBron. And if LeBron leaves, then, you know, somebody who could maybe, you know, be a focal point. But he hasn't been that. You know, he intentionally signed he was a restricted free agent last year, and he signed, you know, a qualifying offer so he could get to unrestricted free agency. So, you know, he didn't have any interest in doing anything long term. You know, I don't think he, you know, particularly wants to be there. So might as well, you know, see if they can get something for him. You know, for maybe a player of his caliber, it's, you know, not quite enough. You know, somebody might come in and, you know, offer more for Rodney Hood than, you know, Marquise Chris in a second. But, you know, for the Cavs, I mean, that he's definitely a player that they should not be, you know, hanging on to, you know, after February 7th.
Pretty much spot on right there. Moving on to day 17 today. Don Pence has the Clippers receiving Nikola Vucevic, Orlando receiving Morrison Gortat, Jerome Robinson, a 2019 second-round pick, and a future second-round pick.
I mean, that's, you know, basically putting it all on Jerome Robinson, you know, being a, you know, turning into a good player. And I always thought that Jerome Robinson pick was kind of weird. You know, not that I'm, you know, the same level of college basketball fan as I am NBA fan, but, you know, I follow the action. And all of a sudden, you know, here's this guy who's going to get, you know, picked, you know, right to kind of at the tail end of the lottery, you know, just outside. And I feel like I've never even heard of this guy, you know, but why is he, you know, at all interesting? And, you know, and I guess, you know, he turned it up a little bit for, you know, Boston College and, you know, displayed some sort of skill set, you know, in the interview process that made him desirable. But, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been great for the Clippers. And I don't think Jerome Robinson's been able to get off the bench. So, you know, it's really a play for the future of Jerome Robinson, which I think is very much up in the air. You know, obviously Vucevic is being sent all over the place in some of these mock trades. You know, I don't know if the Clippers are necessarily, you know, a particularly interesting destination for him. I mean, he's an expiring, so, you know, I think they want to make sure that they don't have, you know, any money locked up after this year. But I don't know that, you know, they'd want to, you know, devote time and energy to, you know, Vucevic and integrating him, you know, where they are right now, like on the edge of the Western playoff picture.
Yeah, I mean, I think from breaking down from Orlando's perspective first, Vucevic, I don't know what they're going to be able to get for him. You're probably not going to re-sign him this offseason regardless. So if this is the best they could get in return, then it's not terrible. I think Jerome Robinson has some kind of value. As you mentioned, going into the draft, I had no idea who this guy was. I mean, if you look at his per 36 minute numbers, he could be averaging 16-2-2 on shooting splits of 46-42.
Is that projecting out the 2 minutes a game that he's been playing?
Yeah, it is. But I think he's got some value. Obviously, Orlando's rebuilding. Gortat started his career, I believe, with Orlando, so that could be a nice little right. So that could be a nice little reunion for however long that is. They get 2 second round picks, one this year, which it probably won't be anything crazy, and then a future second round pick doesn't have the date specified. And then, you know, from Clippers' perspective, you know, this is a team that's probably a star away from being, you know, a threat again in the West. They've obviously played really good team basketball. Tobias Harris has been really good for them. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander looks like he could be something going forward. Montrezl Harrell. So the Clippers are very interesting. So who knows? They get a guy like Vucevic. You know, maybe he's not in the long-term plan necessarily, but maybe he does enough for them wanting to extend him and re-sign him. Because I think Vucevic could be a part of a decent, maybe not a contending team, but a playoff contending team for years to come, depending on where he fits. Because I do think because he has added the 3-point shot to his game, he is more viable in today's NBA.
Yeah, he could be like your third best player, maybe on a championship team. Like, I think that'd probably be best case scenario. I don't think he'd be your number one or number two. I think Orlando, in this perspective, is like at the deadline, they're not getting many offers and they just pull the plug and they don't feel like they're going to make the playoffs. But if this is like the best offer they're getting, they might just keep Vucevic and try to fight for the playoffs. I think they're looking for at least a late first round pick. Like, that would just make sense because he is a fringe all-star player. And like you guys said about Jerome Robinson, like, yeah, he was a lottery pick, but are we even sure he's going to be, you know, a starting level NBA player at any point? So that pretty much wraps it up for the trade deadline. Just wanted to touch on the Gasol and Conley rumor a little bit more. So Corey brought up in Hot Take Shot Fake, what are some options you think for, you know, Conley or Gasol, like team-wise, together or separate?
Well, I think as we discussed earlier on, you know, Conley is the more enticing of the two players. You know, he is, you know, of course, this not like necessarily famously never made an all-star team, but is noteworthy. I mean, I think if you know thought about the best players in the league who never made an all-star team, Mike Conley would be, you know, right up at the top of that list. You know, just happened to, you know, come into the league at a time when, you know, there's a glut of, you know, tremendously talented guards, and just, you know, the game that he plays is not, you know, the same game as, you know, a Harden or a Westbrook, you know, where it's super ball dominant. He's always been, you know, a facilitator who had the ability to score, and, you know, and he continues to be that to this day. I mean, putting up, you know, very typical Mike Conley season, you know, 20 points, you know, basically 6 assists, 3 rebounds. You know, he is a very good player. You know, just not an excellent one. So I think that in as much as, you know, we're seeing such a renaissance in some point guard play and so many, you know, lead guards or, you know, primary ball handlers represent the stars of the league. You know, there are some teams that if they had a real point guard would, you know, be tremendously impacted. You know, obviously, I mean, we talk about like the Detroit Pistons. You know, and I don't know that they could put together a move for him, but the Pistons would be so much better if Mike Conley was running the team instead of Reggie Jackson. We've been talking about, you know, Orlando and Vucevic. I mean, I don't think that there's, you know, anything there, you know, in terms of just, you know, a Conley, you know, Vucevic swap, because you'd have to make sure that Gasol was out of town because, you know, Gasol and Vucevic are not, you know, able to be played together, of course. But you know, there's another team that it's a young team. You put a veteran, talented point guard like Mike Conley on the Magic, and I think the Magic would, you know, be an entirely different story. So you have teams around the league that with a legit point guard would be, you know, impacted in a huge way. And, you know, I think that Mike Conley is eminently movable. I mean, I know he's got a big deal. He absolutely has a big contract, but there are lots of people out there who have big contracts. So you can definitely make a play for Mike Conley. You know, maybe I'll put something up on OTG, you know, now that, that's out there as a, you know, a legit, option for Memphis is trading Conley. But there are, you know, more than a handful of teams that would benefit from him, you know, Pistons, Magic, you know, that's just too many.
Yeah, I've spent the last several days trying to figure out moves for Mike Conley, where he can go. I have five teams down that I've been looking extensively with the NBA, ESPN NBA trade machine, and that's the Detroit Pistons that you just mentioned, Jeremy, the San Antonio Spurs, the Utah Jazz, the New Orleans Pelicans, and the Indiana Pacers. Those are the five teams that I've thought of. I mean, the Orlando Magic, it's a good point. If they want to push for a playoff spot, which it seems that they want to try and do this year, then getting a veteran point guard like Conley would probably help. I was looking at teams that are pretty much on the cusp of being maybe a little bit more threatening to whatever conference they're in. I don't know if there's a giant market for Gasol. Gasol, for me, is really hard to move. I just don't see anybody wanting to take on him this year and next year at his age. Obviously, if he was playing like he was in the beginning of the year, it may be a different question, but he's really just looked slow and old since that hot start that Memphis has had. So I just don't think there's a lot of openings for him. But Conley, I mean, as you mentioned, never made an all-star game, but he got the money well-deserving of how he played. Probably a little bit too much still, but he's a tremendous, very good underrated point guard who plays both sides of the ball.
So you heard it, guys. Both these guys are going to be sending out trade deadline marathon articles about Mike Conley. I agree, guys. I think you brought up great points. It's going to be, you know, obviously interesting situation where you take on Conley. It has to be a team that's not really worried about their cap space moving forward. And the same thing with Gasol. That's why it'll be hard to probably move him unless they're almost taking a bad contract back in Memphis that maybe is a year shorter or just at a lesser amount.
And a fun little tidbit for why I bring up the Pacers. Mike Conley's from Indiana. So there's been kind of like maybe they can bring him back to the home, you know, hometown.
I think it's not a terrible fit. And, you know, the Pacers aren't necessarily big time, you know, spot for free agents. So I think bringing in an all-star caliber player like Conley would make a lot of sense for them and could give them a major boost. And I don't think he would have a problem fitting in.
Right.
Oh, absolutely not.
Plus the Pacers have a lot of expirings in Bogdanovich and Collison and Corey Joseph. Then a couple of young guys, you know, and Aaron Holiday and TJ Leaf, they could probably find a package that gives enough assets and expirings that may interest Memphis.
I mean, of the teams that you mentioned, the Pacers are the ones that I'm most interested in. I mean, on a different podcast, we'd had a conversation, not necessarily us, but on an OTG podcast, maybe, you know, teams in need of point guard upgrades. And the Pacers were definitely one that I had identified before, and I forgot about them as we were talking about them just now. But as you mentioned, he is from, you know, Indianapolis. You know, he'd gone to high school with Greg Oden in Indianapolis. You know, and he is, you know, really the perfect fit for that team. I mean, I think even if the Pacers never made the playoffs, but they were entirely comprised of people who grew up in Indiana, Pacers fans would still be happy about it. You know, he fits, you know, their ethos. I think he'd play really well alongside Oladipo. I mean, You know, Conley went to Ohio State. I'm from Ohio, so I've followed Conley for years. It would make me very happy to see him back in Indiana playing for the Pacers. I think that would be a great spot for him.
Another East team that has been mentioned too is Philly, but that pretty much wraps it up for today, guys. As always, pleasure having you on, Jeremy. Always a pleasure talking hoops with you, Corey, and thank you everybody for listening. Check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
It was a great time, Nick. Let's do it again soon.
Peace out, knuckleheads.